Our last case this morning is 2021-1062, State Expo Candy Bowling et al. Versus Michael DeWine et al. Sitting for Justice DeWine is Judge Emanuela Groves from the 8th District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge.
Thank you so much.
For the appellant, Mr. Hendershot.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, in May of 2021, as Ohio emerged from the depths of the pandemic.
Is there a final appealable order?
Well, yes, we think there is, because the consequences of the injunction, especially the 10th District's ruling here, decides the legal question here, which is something that we still, because we don't know with assurances from the Department of Labor whether the money is still there or not, the legal consequences of the 10th District's ruling are still something that we have the opportunity to reverse.
Well, is the case moot then?
I wish I could tell you with confidence that the case was moot, but because we don't have assurances from the Department of Labor, and believe me, we've tried to get those assurances, whether the money there, remember this is all 100% federal money, the money that would be passed on to those who are unemployed, but we don't have assurances whether that money is there or not. We can't say with confidence whether the case is moot.
Thank you.
So, Your Honor, the decision that the governor made in May of 2021 was to withdraw 2 months early from just one of three large federal pandemic unemployment insurance programs. He made that decision after hearing from businesses, large and small, that they faced a new crisis, and that was an inability to fill thousands upon thousands of open positions. That threatened some of their own existence and the people that relied on it, their employees, their owners, their customers, even their future employees. Now, of course, the governor recognized in making that decision it would reduce the dollar amount of the unemployment checks that were going out at the time, but he thought that overall, on balance, for the macroeconomy of the state, for those businesses, for the future of those businesses, that was a decision he had to make. So he took that targeted choice to withdraw from just one of those three programs 2 months early. Now, you can debate the policy wisdom of that, but the judicial role in that debate, we think, is an exceedingly narrow one, and that is to decide whether the plain text of one Ohio statute took that decision out of the governor's hands, and we think it plainly did not. That's why every appellate court in the country that has looked at this question, and remember, almost all states have a statute much like Ohio's because they all derive from the same Department of Labor publication in the 1970s. Every appellate court that has looked at this has agreed with the governor's position here and disagreed with Bowling's. Now, to see why that is so plain, I want to make 2 points about the statute here. This is what we have called the cooperation statute in the briefs. This is at 4141.43 subparagraph I. Number one, that statute, and I think my friends here agree, the statute requires whatever it requires of any actor, the director, the governor, and so forth, it requires it only as to the five listed federal statutes that are there in the revised code. And so Bowling, I think she agrees, if you look at pages 16 to 20 of her brief, that she must house her claim under one of those five federal statutes, and she's unable to do that. These benefits, these dollars that the governor decided to withdraw from 2 months early, are available, they're appropriated by, and made available under the CARES Act and its subsequent reauthorizations. They're not available under the Social Security Act or any of the other statutes that are listed there. So that is problem one under the statute.
Counselor, can you help me understand then, in regards to the listing of the five federal statutes, how do you reconcile the statute that requires 4141.43I to be construed liberally?
Sure, Your Honor. I make several responses about 0.45, the liberal construction statute there. So number one, that cannot change the meaning of words. As this court said in Armstrong and in the Presbyterian Retirement Systems case, for example. So it doesn't change the meaning of, for example, available under, and that means pursuant to, authorized by. So it must point to one of those federal statutes. Second point is,
although the funds are channeled through the Social Security Act, even though the source is through the CARES Act, but it still comes through the unemployment compensation, correct?
No, Your Honor, we think that is incorrect. So 2 points to make about the channeling. Number one, the mere channeling of the funds does not make the funds available. And that's what the South Carolina Supreme Court and the Indiana Appellate Court, looking at this exact same question under the very similar state laws of those two states have said. So merely serving as the conduit or the banking mechanism is not something that makes funds available under the meaning of the statute. But more importantly, these funds are not channeled through the Social Security Act accounts. That's what distinguishes this program. Recall the governor withdrew from only one of these three programs. The other two programs, let me back up for a moment, just explain those very quickly. The three programs, program one expanded the scope. It reached others who normally didn't qualify, like Uber drivers. Program two extended the length of unemployment. Program three, the one we're talking about here, increased the value of the benefits. So if you look at the first two of those programs I described, those are in 15 USC 9021 and 9025. Those do use Social Security Act accounts. If you look, for example, at subparagraph G1 of 9021, it references Title 42 accounts. That's the Social Security Act. There is no such reference in the 9023 subparagraph D. That's the program we're talking about here. It just uses funds directly from the Treasury. So it doesn't use the conduit of other programs, like the two programs that Ohio remained involved in. It's not just that the statutes say that plainly. The Department of Labor said that in a program letter that we cite on page 9 of our reply brief. And the 10th District actually said Bowling's description of this program as using Social Security Act accounts was not accurate. That's at paragraphs, I believe, 42 and 43 of the 10th District's opinion. So that, I think, rounds out reason one why Bowling's theory of this case doesn't work. She agrees she must point to one of these five federal statutes. I think she spends her energy pointing to the Social Security Act. Nothing about these dollars, which were appropriated under and made available under the CARES Act and its reauthorizations, are available under the Social Security Act. And that's for both of those reasons. Being the conduit is not making available, and these funds are not even available through that conduit at all. Now, we have a second reason that this statute, we think, doesn't get Bowling where she wants to go, even if you thought one of these five federal statutes did the trick for her, and that is that this statute overall is about the state's preparation and not the state's obligation. And there are a couple of features of the statute that show that. It names the director, not the governor. You'd expect something that binds and obligates the chief executive of the state to take certain action to name the governor, not one of his subordinates. It talks about taking steps as may be necessary. That's not the language of obligation. In this area, in federal unemployment, the language you would see would be agreements. It is to enter or exit agreements. And that's why the federal statute explicitly says for this program, that's in 9023 subparagraph A, it gives the states the option to have never joined, to have joined, and then to unenroll from the program at their option. That's a discretion that's explicitly in federal law. And then finally, this statute, this is the third of three things I want to mention about why it's preparatory and not obligatory, is that it talks about passing rules and regulations. It is aimed at making the state ready to have someone exercise the discretion to enter or exit these programs. So just to recap, Your Honor, we think Bowling must point to one of these five statutes, and she has not done so. Also, this statute is about preparations and not obligations. So this case, we think, was one always enter to enter a policy fray. Now it's an invitation to enter yesterday's. We urge you to join all the appellate courts in the country that have looked at this question and said there's not an obligation on states' chief executive officers to do something that federal law explicitly permits them to withdraw from. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the balance of the time and the clock for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dan.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Mark Dan, and I, along with my colleagues Andy Engel and Brian Flick, represent Candy Bowling and the other plaintiff appellees in this matter. This court should affirm the decision of the 10th District because, as this court said in State versus Boyke, quote, the first and defining principle of a free constitutional government is separation of powers. Here's our argument in a nutshell. First, under Ohio's Constitution, the people of Ohio granted the legislature the exclusive authority to make laws providing for the welfare of Ohio's workforce. Second, pursuant to that authority, the General Assembly passed Ohio's unemployment compensation laws. Third, in so doing, the General Assembly directed the executive branch to make sure that Ohio workers receive all advantages available under federal unemployment programs. And by the way, the statute doesn't use funds, as referred to by my colleague. They use the word advantages available under those statutes. Fourth, the General Assembly further directed...
What advantages are there besides the funds?
The FPUC funds that are the subject of this, and I'm terrified of using that shortening of the statute, but the FPUC funds that were appropriated through the CARES Act solely flowed through, they were not a standalone benefit. They only flowed to people who were otherwise eligible under the Social Security Act or the Extended Unemployment Compensation Act for benefits. So no one who didn't qualify. And by the way, one of the requirements, which kind of goes to the governor's policy argument, was that anybody who was receiving those benefits was required to look for work. So they weren't excluded from the workforce, but they had to qualify for those other benefits. An additional advantage provided by the the federal government through the CARES Act was this additional amount of money that was then made available both to the employees for their own needs and for the businesses that they patronize, where they can spend the money, which is it seems to me was the intent of the legislature at the time. And this is exactly the situation that the legislature was contemplating. There'd be some sort of...
Do the appellees agree that the equity side of the case is moot? The injunction?
Your Honor, no, I don't agree that the...
Well, the CARES Act ended in September.
Yes, Your Honor. However,
it's now May.
Your Honor, the funds remain appropriated, and our research is the same as the state's, that there is no indication that those funds are not necessarily available. But it goes further.
But your defendant is the governor, right? The governor doesn't have those funds.
Your Honor,
Department of Labor might, maybe, we don't know.
Justice Fischer, the answer is yes, the governor doesn't have the funds, but our argument is that the state has the obligation because the governor's actions were ultra vires. He acted without constitutional or statutory authority to turn down those funds, and so as a result, the entitlement of those workers to that money remains, whether the federal government funds it or not. So in that case, we would take the position that it's not moot.
That's why I'm asking on the injunction side, because in effect you're asking for damages from the state.
Justice,
the money's with the feds, right? So the money would have to come from somebody, come from the state.
Justice Fischer, the money would come from the state. Whether it would be characterized as damages or not, I think is
or restitution. I don't care.
Restitution under yes, under some theory, the money has to go. The entitlement remains because the turndown was without statutory or legal authority.
Isn't it also likely that the attorneys at the Department of Labor would be watching what's going on in Ohio, and might actually have the money set aside, but they're just not telling you. I mean, that's a possibility as well, correct?
Justice Bruner, that's the best information that we have at this point in time, and that to the extent that there's any information in the record, that's what it is. But you need to look no further than to the Ohio's Constitution to see that the 10th District got this decision right. Article 2, Section 34 gives the General Assembly exclusive power to enact laws for the benefit of employees. The section includes a clause declaring that no other provision of the Constitution shall impair or limit that power. As Justice Kennedy wrote in the majority opinion in City of Cleveland versus Ohio, quote, the authority vested in the General Assembly under Article 2, Section 34, to pass laws advancing employees' comfort and general welfare, therefore includes laws providing for the assistance, support, well-being, and prosperity of Ohio's working people. I don't see how this could fit any more directly into that constitutional provision.
How do we reconcile that the governor was legally granted the ability to accept or reject or withdraw from one or more of the programs?
Your Honor, the reason is that the federal government cannot establish or take away a constitutional or statutory power. A contract with the federal government, which is the state's argument, somehow magically imbued the governor with power that he had not under the Constitution of the state or under the state statutes. You can't create it out of nothing. So there would be no ability. And look, if you look to the governor's powers under the Constitution, in Article 3, Section 6 and 7, the governor shall see that laws are faithfully executed. Section 7 directs how the governor should have handled this, his policy conclusion, if he had reached it, that the FPUC benefit should be terminated. Because it says he should communicate with the General Assembly the condition of the state and recommend such measures as he may deem expedient. So particularly in the area of benefits to workers, the Constitution is clear. The General Assembly sets policy and the governor executes that policy, or in the best case, makes recommendations to the General Assembly to change it. And that issue, the constitutional issue, was absent from all those other state appellate court decisions.
And that was going to be my next question. As you heard, Mr. Hendershot reminds us that this issue has been reviewed by many courts and have gone the other way. How do we reconcile that, and what's different?
Either those states didn't have a constitutional provision like Article 2, Section 34, or the litigants didn't raise that issue. But this is why this is important for this court to speak clearly on. The question becomes, does the governor have only that power which is granted to him through the Constitution or the statutes, or does he have any power that's not prohibited by the Constitution and the statutes? I understand, as being a constitutional officer and separately elected, how tempting it is to want to exercise power beyond that which is decided under policy matters by the General Assembly. But the executive officers of this state are not permitted to do that, particularly when there's such a clear constitutional mandate.
I'm a little confused, because if that's what you're relying on, how could the governor act to receive CARE funds if the General Assembly didn't enact the law? Because now you're saying he can't take that action. So if you're saying he can't take an action, then he couldn't take the action to receive it or terminate it based on your argument, so he couldn't have received it without the General Assembly acting.
Justice Kennedy, I disagree.
And
that's because the statute provides that the administrative officer, in the case the director of unemployment, shall secure all available advantages for Ohio citizens. So the ability, the right to get money, additional advantages coming from the federal government as it relates to unemployment compensation, which I don't think anybody can disagree that this is in the statute. He is statutorily authorized.
He didn't have to take it.
He didn't. Chief Justice, pardon me?
This program, did the director of, you're saying the director of the department is the recipient of those, but he's not the one that made a decision whether to take it or not.
Your Honor, Chief Justice, Madam Chief Justice, all the executive appointments operate under the power of the governor under the Constitution. And so his actions are directly the governor's actions as it relates to this.
Right, but the statute doesn't, again, compel them to accept it, right?
Justice Stewart, I disagree.
Okay.
The statute says that he shall, and they changed it in 1970 from may to shall. Seek and accept all benefits that are available under the Social Security Act and the Unemployment Compensation Act and for the benefit of unemployed Ohioans. And that's exactly, so the governor had clear authority to accept the money and to sign the contract.
Well, to declare authority to do so, but he have a clear mandate to do so?
I believe the statute would compel him to do that. Look, the whole point of this statute was to avoid playing politics with unemployed and people's benefits, which benefit not just the unemployed worker, but they also benefit the businesses that they do business with.
So does the CARES Act only cover unemployment funds, or didn't the CARES Act include a large umbrella of funds for a host of services?
Justice Kennedy, both the CARES Act and the American Recovery Act, and actually these funds that are subject of today's discussion, were actually appropriated under the American Recovery Act, which was the second incantation, is with a lower amount of money. It was $600 and then it went to $300. It is, no one can receive the FPUC benefits without being eligible for other Social Security benefit, other unemployment benefits, all of which the state concedes flow through the Social Security Act and the Extended Unemployment Compensation Act. And so those FPUC benefits are simply just simply another advantage. The governor was empowered under 4141.43i to accept them, but he wasn't empowered to make the policy decision to remove them. And the truth is, in a budget year, the legislature was in session right up through this entire process. It would have been easy enough for him to make his recommendation to the legislature, and that policy could have been debated. If the legislature wanted to change their direction, that the executive officers should maximize the benefits that they receive or that unemployed workers receive, they could have done that. The governor never asked them to do it, and that would have been his appropriate role under the Constitution.
Mr. Dan, when I look at the cooperation statute, and it says to secure to this state and its citizens all advantages available under the provisions, and then they name the particular acts, and this statute, if it goes back 50 years, I mean, aren't there federal training programs, federal rehabilitation programs that wouldn't necessarily be a cash handout to people, but it would fall within this provision of all advantages available. Am I looking at this? Am I within the realm the way I'm looking at this?
Justice Brunner, exactly. The legislature couldn't anticipate a global pandemic of historic proportions when they passed this law. What they did understand is that things change and emergencies arise and recessions happen and pandemics happen, and so the executive needs to have the authority or the direction, the policy direction, which is exclusively granted to the legislature under the Constitution, in order to act in the absence of further policy decisions by the legislature. There was a period of time when the legislature couldn't meet, and this directive was so they got it. They got it. They actually thought this through and got this right. The 10th District ruled that the governor violated his duty by terminating those unemployment benefits and contravention.
So let me just ask you this question. If your scenario is correct, that it was up to the legislature to agree to take this money, mm-hmm. right, would they have to amend 4141.43i in order to include the CARES Act or the Recovery Act? Because these just have five acts that are, maybe the most recent was 1970. So they don't. The CARES Act is not a blend of the Federal Unemployment Tax Act or the Wagner-Peiser Act or the Federal State Extended Unemployment Compensation Act of 1970 or the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. It's a separate act.
Madam Chief Justice, the first thing I disagree with in your characterization is that the governor didn't have the authority to accept the funds pursuant to 4141.43. I believe that directed him to accept those funds. To reject the funds is the question that's in front of the court today. And you have to look at these statutes as they work in conjunction with one another.
Well, I was just going to ask about that. Let's talk about 107.17.
Sure.
Doesn't it give the governor the judgment to decide whether it benefit the state and its citizens?
Justice Fischer, I apologize.
Too many Pats.
Too many people from Cincinnati here.
Not enough, maybe.
Not enough. That's right, correct. Justice Fischer, I disagree. First of all, the governor didn't do what was technically required under 107.17, which was to issue an executive order. No such executive order was issued. And his duty under that statute is to notify the General Assembly, consistent with the separation of powers division.
But even then, it only gives him power for 1 year.
That's right. It limits his power for 1 year. So
even if he had done all that, why not end it? It started in March of 20. Why not end it March of 21?
Your Honor, because he didn't have the power to do it, because it was the reason he could accept the funds to begin with. He didn't have to exercise that power because he was already authorized to receive them under 4141.43I and 4141.45.
But 107.17 gives it his judgment. That's what I was getting to. It's discretionary.
Except, Your Honor, the governor can't exercise discretion that's not granted to him under the or that's prohibited from him under the Constitution or the statutes. Here, the legislature says we're the people that are going to decide this. I mean, and you don't see this in every statute that gets passed. They're saying we're the only ones that can make these decisions in the future. They were very clear. The provision of Article 2, Section 34 is extraordinarily broad and specific to worker-related benefits, which this court has found in its prior decisions would include unemployment compensation benefits. And so the 107, we never get to 107.17. I do want to address the issue of the, I think we've talked about the flow of funds sufficiently.
You've used your time, Mr. Dan.
Thank you, Your Honor. We would ask that the court affirm the 10th District decision and remand this matter back to the Franklin County Common Police Court for consistent proceedings.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I want to begin with something that I heard my friend say, that the state concedes that these monies flow through the Social Security Act. That if I wasn't clear about that before, we absolutely disagree with that. If you look at the face of the statute, I urge you to look at 15 U.S.C., compare 9021 and 9025. Those are the programs that the state remained involved in. They explicitly refer to Title 42 accounts. Those are Title 42 is where the Social Security Act is housed. 9023 does not include that. We've pointed you to the Department of Labor interpretation. If you look at page I-8 of that publication, that's on page 9 of our reply brief. We do not agree that these funds flow through the Social Security Act accounts at all. And I don't see anything in my friend's argument or in their briefing that shows how they flow through the Social Security Act.
Mr. Hendershot,
at all.
Mr. Hendershot, but like many federal programs, a person has to already qualify for some specific existing federal programs to be eligible for the funds. Is that an appreciable difference?
We don't think so, Your Honor. So here, the underlying programs would be one of two things. If so, it is true that the funds that we're talking about here were funds that were available to those who were already receiving some other set of funds. They'd be receiving those either under A, traditional unemployment, which is state-funded, state-administered, and so forth, or one of the other programs. That's, for example, the one I described as reaching, for example, Uber drivers. But that's also, that was created by the CARES Act as well and its reauthorization. So,
but doesn't the federal government a lot of times do that so that they can sort of bypass the process needed for eligibility? Because if you're already eligible for this program, then you're going to be eligible for this program, and we can get the funds to you faster, and we don't have to basically waste a lot of the process by duplicating the eligibility requirement and verification?
Well, for eligibility, maybe, but think about, again, compare this program to the other two programs. There, and the other two programs that Ohio remained involved in, they did, I think, what you're describing, which is to use existing accounting systems that are established under the Social Security Act. Now, I do want to be clear, we don't think that satisfies the meaning of available under, but this program is different. It doesn't use those accounts. And let me back up to that available under point for a moment. You know, imagine you have a tax benefit that's available to those who have gone through bankruptcy. You would not say the benefit is available under the bankruptcy code. You'd say it's available under the tax code. That's what makes it available, just like the CARES Act and its reauthorizations here make available by appropriating the money here and by giving the states, through the governors, the options to participate or not.
I understand, but if I'm a social worker, we'll flip this around. If we're doing top down, if I'm going to go bottom up, and if I'm a social worker and I'm counseling somebody who's on Social Security disability, and I know the availability of this, I'm going to say, hey, you know, you're also eligible for this. And so I don't know why there's an appreciable difference in the wording, because essentially, but for the fact that they're on Social Security, they wouldn't be eligible for those extra payments.
Well, Your Honor, Social Security disability benefits are different than these programs. So what would qualify?
I should have said disability, just Social Security. Sorry.
Sure, even Social Security. So let's back up to the 1935 Social Security Act. It does not confer benefits at all. It encouraged the states. You can look at one of the U.S. Supreme Court's canonical cases, the Stewart Machine case. It explains how what the original Social Security Act did was to incentivize the states to create their own unemployment compensation systems. So there are not benefits under the Social Security Act that are provided at all. The dollars that flow to those who are unemployed, if you take all the pandemic programs off the table for a moment, they are created by state law, they're administered by state law, they're encouraged by federal law. So there are not benefits available under the Social Security Act. The benefits are available either under state law, one of the pandemic programs that Ohio did remain involved in, or the 1970 extended program, which was not applicable here because it only kicks in when labor conditions in a state hit a certain threshold. It did not apply at all in 2021. So even if you were looking for a connection to benefits, other benefits that somebody was already receiving, the listed acts here do not confer those benefits. The underlying benefits that any of these recipients were getting, to which these dollars would have been added, were not any of those five federal statutes, so not available under the Social Security Act, the Wagner-Payser Act, the Workforce Reinvestment Act.
So, and the last thing I'll say, so de jure, correct, de facto, but for already getting those benefits, you wouldn't get the CARES Act benefits. Do we have to ignore the de facto?
No, Your Honor, but again, those benefits that you have to, that you, as you're correctly pointing out, that you have to receive some other benefits first, those underlying benefits are not available under any of the five federal statutes. They're available under state law. Take a look at the cases we've cited on page 29 of our brief. These are a series of bankruptcy cases that looked at that exact question. Are traditional unemployment benefits available under the Social Security Act or under state law? And they say under state law. So the underlying benefits that you're right are a trigger for these dollars that are at dispute here are not available under any of the five listed acts. And in addition, these specific dollars don't flow through the Social Security Act accounts.
Counsel, I have a question. So is it your position then that the General Assembly has not given any policy guidance when the interest of commerce competes with the interest of employee benefits?
Your Honor, I think it has largely left that question to the governor. That's why we think the statute is about preparation and not obligation. And that's consistent with all the federal programs in this space that I'm aware of. You go back to all the programs created in the Great Recession and the programs created here. Federal law gives the option to the states to not participate, to participate, to participate, and then withdraw. So the guidance the General Assembly has given here is to say, director, do the things necessary to participate if that is an option that is exercised. You know, as I see the time runs out here, I would just say that, again, every court that has looked at this under very similar statutes has agreed with the position the governor is advancing here. Let's see if the time takes that. Unless there are further questions,
just
urge
just briefly, you'll urge us to reverse. But if you can address Mr. Dan's distinction, he's saying the cases that you refer to that have ruled the way you argue today are different in that those jurisdictions don't have the similar provision of the Ohio statute that makes it such that we should affirm this decision of the 10th District.
Well, the statutes are almost identical. If you look at, say, the South Carolina case, the Brannon decision from their Supreme Court, I think what Mr. Dan was saying is those cases don't talk about something like Article 2, Section 34. That is true. None of those cases do discuss something like that, but we think that is just a red herring. What Article 2, Section 34 does is to empower the General Assembly to pass laws. It doesn't answer the statutory interpretation question here. I'd also point out that as I read the Cleveland versus State case about the contracting, four of the opinions in that case agree that that part of the Constitution is about working conditions. That's why it uses words like labor and wages. It's not about non-working conditions. So we think that it's not relevant for two reasons, the interpretation in those opinions in that decision, but also this is about the meaning of this statute, not whether the General Assembly has the authority. We don't doubt they would have the authority to pass a very clear statute that says the governor must sign every agreement the federal government offers in this space, and they've passed no such statute. Compare what the Maryland trial court did. That's the only court I'm aware of in the country that's gone the other way. It was not appealed by Maryland's governor. There, that court read Maryland's General Assembly as saying, take all available benefits. We don't have anything similar here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you please adjourn court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.